Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for standing by. Welcome to today's Allogene Therapeutics preliminary results call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question and answer session, at which time, if you wish to ask a question, you will need to press star one on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. I must also advise you that this conference is being recorded today on Wednesday, the 26th of September, 2018. I'd now like to hand the conference over to your speaker today, Manuel López. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody. Thank you very much for coming here for this prelims presentation. Let's go straight forward to the headlines. I would say it's been a productive year. We increased market share by one more point. We are increasing roughly between 1 and 1.5 market share a year. Reported revenue was almost 7%, and pre-R&D profit was 26% up compared to last year, thanks to leveraging on our current infrastructure. As you know, after finishing the year in 30th of June, we raised 10.6 million gross, and cash balance at June was 15.5 million. In terms of pipeline progress, we announced results for the phase II PQGrass, and we completed the phase III study for PQBirch. You know very well in slide number five, the three pillars of our strategy. We are, as a management team, totally focused on these three areas. One is to develop the revenue business model in Europe. Second is to move forward the pipeline. Third is preparing the U.S. entry. If we look at the European business, I think in slide number seven, nothing relevant to say. Not big changes. Sales by product and by market are similar to last year, so there is no significant changes here. Maybe more interesting one is the number eight, where we have completed our 19th year. It's almost 20 years, two decades of double-digit growth since we spun out from GlaxoSmithKline. That's what we expect to keep doing. Our aim is to keep growing on a compound annual growth rate in Europe, high single digit, low double digit. Remember that Europe is a mature market. It's growing very slowly, around 2%, 1%, sometimes -1%, basically flat. There are many competitors, but we are growing at expense of the competition. Probably the three key points of success here are, number one, a really good commercial team that is very well-trained, highly professional, and extremely motivated and committed. Second, the ultra-short course concept, that it's a concept that it's the base of our philosophy, patient-friendly vaccines. That leads to compliance, that leads to efficacy. In the market, as you know, most of the treatments are long treatments, especially the oral ones, and patients are less keen to accept this kind of long-term treatment. The ultra-short course concept is getting through. Number three, as you know, there's been a big regulatory change, especially in Germany, but in other European markets. We have turned out to be probably the most reliable company. We have a superb supply chain. We are delivering in customer service numbers above 99% of all our orders served on time, and we have sort of got the reputation to be the most reliable company in the field. These three facts are making us a really good performer, probably the best performer in the market. The pipeline, which is the most exciting part of the company. As you can see here, we have a really nice pipeline. We have assets in phase III, late-stage assets, phase III, phase II. That's basically for the PQ platform. We have early-stage assets where we are getting into the perennial segment of the market with the mite project and the food allergy market with the Polivac peanut vaccine. The two key trials this year have been the PQ BIRCH, that's the phase III for the European submission, almost 600 patients, multicentric, almost 60 centers in four European countries. The trial has completed as planned, and we are now expecting readout before the end of the year. The data processing took a little bit longer than we expected, so we are fine with that, and we will come back to you as soon as we get the data. For PQ GRAS, you saw the results. We met the primary endpoint. We met all the secondary endpoints. It was a really successful study. You can see here that it's almost by the book dose response. So as you increase the dose, you get better efficacy, plateauing to a point where additional amount of allergen does not provide additional marginal efficacy. So that allowed us to identify the best possible dose to go into phase III, that this is going to be the next step. Remarkably, in spite of increasing the dose significantly, we didn't see any safety signals, so that made us very happy because it's going to be a pretty safe vaccine, as safe as the 5,000 standard units. Now, what should we expect in terms of timelines? We are planning to have an end of phase two meeting with the FDA, with CBER, and also with European regulatory authorities in order to agree all the details for the final and pivotal phase three that we aim to start next year in 2019. So we should be doing all the preparatory works and recruitment H1 2019, treat the patients during the autumn, and read out in 2020. And if we get the results we expect, we could file 2021 and get, if we are lucky, maybe approval end of 2021 or early 2022. We are working already in the U.S. We have a network of opinion leaders. We are creating some critical mass of important doctors, and we are in contact also in relation with American Academy, American College. So we are building the sort of network of relations to as we move forward to the potential launching of the product. The house dust mite vaccine, remember, I mean, you are familiar with the company. That's a project where, I mean, almost all our franchise was around pollen products. Grass, ragweed, tree, and so on. But we didn't have a really good product for house dust mite. We had native allergen vaccine in the US, in Germany, which is named Tyromilbe, but it's a little bit old-fashioned. So we decided to bring to the market a state-of-the-art vaccine in this very important perennial segment, like house dust mite is the most important, but also cat or dog or whatever. So we did a transfer technology exercise, and we adapted the MATA MPL, modified allergen tyrosine absorbed plus MPL platform to house dust mite. We started with this prototype. It's in phase one. It's progressing well. We have three cohorts of patients. We have treated the first two cohorts, and there is one remaining. We are expecting to finish H1 next year, and we also aim to start phase two for Acarovac in 2019. It's an interesting market. We launched a simplified version of this product as an inpatient product in Spain, and we have got a really good commercial response. In fact, it's the fastest growing product in Spain, and it became number one product in a couple of years. And that makes us very confident that this product can be not only a good product from a therapeutic point of view, but also from a commercial point of view. In slide number 16, the Polivac peanut, also you know about this project, very, very exciting. There is a big race in the market in the U.S. around this product. We've been in the U.S. talking to some people, and there's a lot of excitement about this. As you know, there are two candidates that have completed phase three. And this project, once again, we are remaining loyal to our philosophy. We are planning the target product profile for this product. It's going to be around three injections if everything goes okay. What we saw in the preclinical study with an animal model is that with only one injection, we got full protection and no safety signals. So that was very promising. And if you compare this to what the two candidates in the market, one is the patch with the transdermal technology, the picutaneous technology, it takes a long time, and the immune product, which is basically peanut powder, increases the tolerability, but probably not an immunological shift. And you have to take it for a long time. So once again, there is a sort of parallelism between our PQ platform against, for example, oral treatments in specific immunotherapy, and in food allergy, we are again talking about ultra short course treatment compared to what we will have in the market. These two companies are expecting to file at the end of this year. And they will probably one or the two of them get marketing authorization. The process now with this project is, as you know, that the preclinical study was done with a vaccine made in the lab. So we are scaling it up into an industrial model that we can make it GMP. We'll get the industrial vaccine H1 next year. It's going according to plan, and as soon as we get the vaccine manufactured under GMP conditions, we'll start first into human in 2019. The U.S. has progressing well. The key issue was to get this phase two. Now we are preparing the phase three that is also going according to plan. So I would say that the road for marketing authorization is going according to plan again. That these are the snapshots of some figures about the U.S., but maybe the most relevant one here in slide 18 is the 16 adherence rate. That's what they got now in the U.S. So only 16 out of 100 patients finish the treatment. And those who start the treatment, because you know that 50% of the patients don't start the treatment because they are not ready to go through 50 or 100 injections. So the other 50% who start the treatment, only 16% finish the treatment. And that creates a lot of frustration among payers, especially payers that are getting a little bit more demanding in terms of compliance, and especially patients too, and in some way doctors. So we think that this is here where we can make a huge contribution with the Polinex Quattro franchise, improving dramatically these numbers and getting adherence rates much higher, maybe in the order of 60-70%. We have adherence rates in our clinical trials above 90%. In real life, maybe a little bit lower than that, but this is where we believe we can make a huge contribution in the U.S. market. And needless to say, I think you have seen this slide before. This is a sort of black and white comparison between what we have now in the U.S. market and what we will bring to the U.S. market, which is a breakthrough, and we cannot wait to launch the product in the U.S. So. Maybe finally, to finish this U.S. approach, remind you that our approach is to launch in the U.S. a complete portfolio. So that's not only a one project, one product project, Pollinex Quattro Grass. As you remember, we opened three INDs, PQ Grass, PQ Ragweed, PQ Tree. PQ Ragweed was at phase three, PQ Tree was at phase two. At some point, not very far from now, we'll leave the hole in these two other projects, and we'll resume clinical development plans for these two products. And then we have plans also to include in the portfolio the house dust mite vaccine and the Polivac vaccine. That is where the biggest market in the world is in the U.S. So that was it. As I said at the beginning, we've been, for the last, I say, few years, progressing steadily in the three pillars of our strategy, and very excited about the future of the company. So hand over to you, Nick.
Thank you very much, Manuel. Moving to slide 22, revenues for the year were 68.3 million. That's up 6.6 on the prior year, or 3.5% in constant currency terms. As Manuel has already talked about, this year we had a weak pollen season, which has led to the lower than average growth. Gross profit terms, a gross profit of 51.3 million. That's a percentage of about 75%, so we continue to improve our margin slightly year on year. We had overheads of 42.6 million. That was 5% up on the prior year, with further spending on compliance, rent, and share-based payments. Our research and development in the year ended 30th of June 2018 with 16 million. That was up 6.7 million on the prior year, as we've invested heavily, and Manuel's already talked about the GRASS trial, phase two trial, which completed in the early summer, and the BIRCH trial, which is completed and the results will be reported later. Just to remind you, we had other income of 0.6 million. The other income is the R&D tax credits that we receive, which has obviously helped our cash position. And so the overall result for the year was an operating loss of 6.7 million. That's an increase of loss over the prior year, but obviously we've spent a significant amount more in research and development. One of our key measures as management of this company is to look at our operating profit pre-R&D. It's a key measure because it shows what the underlying European business is doing before all the investment that we make in research and development for the future. And for this year, we had an operating profit pre-R&D of 9.3 million. That was up 26% on the prior year. So that shows leverage, with the top line moving at about 7%, but the operating profit pre-R&D moving at 26%. And that is something that we continue to drive. And in this year where we've had, as I mentioned, weak pollen, we've obviously controlled our costs in order to ensure that we continue to drive that leverage and continue to improve our operating profit pre-R&D. Moving on to slide 23, looking at the analysis of the sales. As I say, we had stable sales growth in the year. The key markets that did have high growth rates were Spain, which was driven by the Acaravac Plus product, which is an earlier version than the one we're developing and Manuel's talked about, which is in phase one, which continues to perform exceedingly well in the Spanish market and is our highest selling product, and in Eastern Europe. Other markets continue to perform robustly. We also had good growth in the Venomil product, which is for the bee and wasp stings. So overall, the FX impact, as you can see from this slide, was slightly lower than in previous years. Just to remind you, the constant rate in the prior year was 1.16 and 1.13 this year. So the difference between the 2 years FX-wise has not been so large as in prior years. Moving on to slide 24, the balance sheet. Just like to highlight one or two areas. The Inventories that we finished the year were 8.8 million. That was 17% up on the prior year. What we've been doing there is we've actually changing some of our manufacturing processes, and in doing so, that's led to higher inventories at the year-end, although we're obviously keeping an eye on that. Trade receivables, we've been working hard to reduce the trade receivables. You can see we've had a drop of 1.3 million in the year as we continue to recover cash faster. Speaking of cash, we finished the year with a cash balance of 15.5 million. You will have seen, and Manuel talked about, since the year-end, we had a successful fundraising. We raised gross 10.6 million in an oversubscribed equity issue. We sit on a good cash position as we currently at this current moment. We have about 3.1 million of debt. That is similar to the prior year. Moving on to slide 25, which is the cash flow. Overall, the net operations, we had an outflow of 4 million, which is a reversal from the prior year, where we had an inflow of 1.5 million. Obviously, we've spent about 6.7 million in additional investment in the research and development. We received in the R&D tax credits in the year, which has also helped our cash position, and finished the year in a good cash position of 15.5 million. I'll now hand back to Manuel.
Thank you, Nick. In summary, delivering against our strategy on the three pillars of growth, pipeline progressing well, a good set of financial numbers, very focused on strategy to be first in the U.S. on the SCIT segment, that we think that it's in good shape, continued gains in market share, and a very successful phase II trial. All in all, it was a solid year, and we are confident to have a really good 2019, that is going to be a pivotal year for the company. Thank you very much for your attention, and happy to take questions, if any.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, just to remind you can press star one on your telephone if you'd like to ask a question. To withdraw your question, you can press the hash key. Once again, that's star and one. Thank you.
Mike.
We've been watching the sort of market backdrop with ALK and Celgene seem to be dealing with their own trials and challenges over recent reporting periods. How are you seeing that sort of market dynamic in terms of their responses in their respective territories where you come up against them? What's the market backdrop look like?
What we see is that the competitive landscape is weak. You saw H1 results from ALK. They were down 1%. They had a significantly bigger loss than the previous year. I don't see many room to grow in Europe for them, and they are betting everything in the U.S. If the U.S. performs well, then they will probably get a good development. If not, I think it's going to be tough. Stalergenes had a 10% growth in H1, which it could seem a good number, but remember that they are yet recovering from the crisis they had. The full year, they are estimating a similar number than the number they had pre-crisis. What they are really doing is catching up the numbers they got 3 years ago. Almost all the growth is coming from France, and they are recovering sales in France, which is their most profitable market, and I think it's the right thing to do. They are coming back to where they were 3 years ago. I see the other players, for what we see from the market data, not really strong player. I don't want to be a little bit arrogant, but I think we are, you know, performing, outperforming the market, and I don't see a competitor that could threaten us in terms of our business plans. Gary.
You mentioned when you were talking about the House Plus Month program that you had a prototype. What's likely to change, if anything, with that when you go into the clinics?
Well, the prototype is Mata alone, so it's might modified with microcrystalline tyrosine, and the one under development is Mata MPL, so with the adjuvant. That's the only change, yeah.
Okay. And just on the rebate, there's a big change there. What happened to make it so little, relatively?
It's really a question of about the product mix and the change in product that's created and it's one of those things we're not absolutely sure how that will develop into next year, but it's really a matter of a product mix and a change in the product that created that.
And just the grass phase three that you're anticipating to start in next year, have you finalized the protocol for that?
Yes.
So that's fixed now.
It's been finalized, it's been sent to authorities, and we are, you know, fine-tuning details. We've not got CTA approval yet, but it's underway.
And you've had the green light with the FDA as well to do that study?
Yeah, well, not officially the CTA. I don't know, I don't recall if the FDA gives you a... I don't think they give you a CTA. They just, if there is silent, yeah, it's okay. Yeah, but I mean, it's going according to plan. So I think now the key issue is this end of phase two meeting, and then the subsequent discussion on the safety database. That will be the last piece of work we'll have to do before submission. And remember that the extension. I mean, this fundraising was to secure that the phase three was fully funded. It is now, and we wanted a little bit more cash because we extended the study in the sense of adding some few more patients, and also the placebo group at the end of the study will receive the product. So if it's, let's say, if we were planning to have a 600 patients study, that would have given us 300 patients for the safety database. But if instead of 600, we go to 700 and we jab the placebo group, this study will give us 700 safety database patients, that it's very valuable. And it's at a very low marginal cost because they all have been screened, they are all identified. So it was a very clever way that the R&D team proposed us to double the number of patients for the safety database. And that was why we added these few millions to be sure that we could fund this. So when we finish the study, we'll have already 700. And then we'll have to discuss how many more we need for the submission. Yeah. Well, the Italian market has been the weakest for years. It's shrinking year after year. We've been increasing our market share in that market, and we've been able to keep sales almost constant in spite of market declines. We believe that this now will stabilize and will remain at the level of last year probably. There have been changes in reimbursement, I mean, in Italy, situation is not easy, as you all know, and there have some regions that have lost reimbursement, and that has affected also the demand or the number of treatments.
Just to come back on the phase three plans on graft, come back to the dose ranging phase two. Which of these doses, is it a single dose study that you're planning? Which of these doses have you selected? And then how does that compare to the previous studies you ran some time ago with graft in the US in terms of that overall safety database?
Right. Well, it's going to be one dose study. Only one dose, two arms, placebo and active. You can see where what's going to be the sort of in the plateau area. That is where we will choose the dose for phase three that has already been chosen. And in the CPT model, this we have not disclosed numbers. Because we are going to publish the study, but what I can tell you is that the efficacy we saw in the CPT model was above the numbers we saw in the field study. But remember that these numbers are with a different dose. So the dose that we have in the market, which is the 5,000, and here in this CPT model, was similar to the efficacy we saw in European patients, that this dose of 5,000 in the G301 delivered for the full data for ITT 14% improvement and full data set 20% improvement. And the dose that we will pick, it's above this level.
Previous studies you ran in the US, do they match any of these doses?
There is one here which is 5,000. That this is the one that we use for the G301 study, and the one that we are taking to phase three is 27,500.
And then if I can on the birch. The timing, obviously, it was initially scheduled for.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, we were a little bit optimistic, maybe. We screw up saying Q3 because we were excited. The G205 was earlier than expected, so we said, okay, it's gonna be. But data handling, data processing, you know, took longer than expected, and we are not going to rush the team, so. When they are ready, they will let us know and we'll announce without delay.
And one final thing, again, in terms of your, they come back on the US opportunity market. Assuming you step through the trial design and have those positive meetings with the FDA and you get an agreement on what sort of pivotal will it, the extent of those trials and therefore the cost of those trials potentially a wider safety database. What do you think then in terms of potential partnering for being able to execute in the US, either during the development phase or post-market?
Well, as I said, the phase three is fully funded. With this extension we did, that we will be able to have a decent number of patients for the safety database. We don't expect to have to add a huge additional number, so I think we'll be able to fund that. And therefore, for us, we think, and for our shareholders, any potential deal of licensing or distribution deal would give us more value if we get the product, take the product until registration. So that we will not, you know, make a final decision until we get this done or almost done. Maybe once we file the dossier, the BLA, maybe we'll really make a decision in terms of third party or go it alone. Paul.
On the purchase, I think the data analysis data has been, and in light of the previous problems with full data set versus partial data set, how missing values got sort of dealt with. Are you happy with just the extent of the symptom scores that patients put in the purchase study? Are you
No, we don't know yet. Nothing. The data is blinded, so we don't know nothing yet. I think that what we had in the US, that you are right, almost 2/3 of the patients did not finish the questionnaires. Thanks to the new technologies and iPads and everything, I think it's been much better, I would say. But we in terms of symptom scores, and we don't know nothing yet. That data is yet blinded, so.
And then any further thinking on the sort of benefit if you do you get the positive purge data to pricing, market share, or sort of risk for the next question if it doesn't come in?
Well, we always said that's not transformational in terms, because we have the product in the market. We'll see if we register the product, we can get a slightly better price, but the general market is not prepared to have big increases. So I would say that there would be a nice replacement, but not transformational. But it's something that we have to do, and maybe the interesting thing is that maybe we can connect this phase three with the three program we have in the US and maybe accelerate that three program in the US on the basis of a good pivotal phase three. Sorry.
Okay, just sort of looking ahead to next year, obviously the summer we've just had very different to 2017 being hot and dry, which you would hope would mean, that you might have more sufferers from allergies, which I think you would have thought would push people to go and get your products, coming into next season. So I was wondering, whether you could see the market growth being sort of stronger, for next year.
Well, we know that it's been a better pollen season than last year. We monitor the rescue medication like symptomatic product, antihistamines and so on, and certainly was better than the previous year, so there's been more consumption of symptomatic products. I think at the end of September we'll have the sort of first hints of how the season is coming. The 2 months of the summer, are really low season for us because we are predominantly a pre-seasonal company, and the key months are October to December. September is important, but the key months are October to December. During the summer, we've got positive growth, but it's not indicative of how the season is going to be, but we are pretty confident that it's going to be better than last year.
And then following that in key months, with the Birch product or the data coming later on in the year, while it's already on the market in a sort of, on a named patient basis, I was wondering whether there might be any sort of pushback in any sort of revenue projections internally, whether you think that data and then subsequent approval would have any impact on revenues, or do you just sort of see it would just be a transition from named patient to...
Yeah, there is a plan. We have a marketing plan, and we are looking at all the angles to do a really good, handover. And we really want to add sales to the company, because what we have seen, for example, with the tablets, is that sometimes the launch of the new tablet cannibalize the drops that these companies had in the market in a way that the net was flat or negative. So we are working on the marketing plan to try to really add additional sales with a new product.
And it's part of the increase in OPEX that you flagged in the statement. Is that to do with the launch of that as a sort of market-wide? I suppose on that, if the market growth is strong, do you invest more behind salespeople? Is that kind of why you're flagging?
Do you want to answer that? On the OPEX, we've highlighted. Obviously, we this year, as I mentioned in 2018, we've constrained costs, so there's a certain amount of releasing for things. But we will be preparing. I mean, obviously, we're still having completed the Birch trial. If we get good results, then it still needs to be filed and approved by before it will release the new product onto the market. But yes, in the next year, there is a certain amount that we will be investing towards the launch of the product. But obviously, that does depend on the timing from the regulators and obviously the results of the trial.
Okay, thank you very much. Any question from the phone line?
Ned, there are no questions at the moment. You can still press star and one, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question from the phones.
Good. Okay, thank you very much. And we'll keep in touch. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. That does conclude the conference for today. You may all disconnect.